before we talk about your campaign, I wanted to let listeners know who might not know a little bit about your political history, and by that I mean your family history involved in politics.
I love talking about my family history because from both my mother and father, I learned the concept of to serve, that being elected to office was not for the purpose of having power to oneself, but rather that it was the purpose of bringing the power of government to improve communities. And some of the most visible ways that my parents did that was my father was a state senator and my mother was one of the early pioneers in bilingual education. Because of her amazing work, not just for New Mexico, but around the country, she was one of the women who pointed out that you needed to have really good curriculum around bilingual education, that you needed to make sure you taught the teacher aides as well as the teachers how to teach in a bilingual education classroom, and that the purpose of bilingual education had to also include a cultural component. You needed to make sure that the kids were learning their language. It was a process of keeping language, not just transitioning to English, but of keeping a home language. And language is a part of culture. And so she did that. As a little child, I traveled a lot to Mexico with her teachers and teacher trainings, and I learned folklorico dancing. I learned songs, and it was all part of, you know, poetry. We had Sabine Ulibarri, who was one of the great poets, at the house reciting. I grew up in a household that was full of the cultural renaissance of New Mexico. My father, he was a state senator, and so it was logical that he would be one of the key co-sponsors of the Bilingual Education Act that my mom and many others helped write. Dad served in the 1970s. My father also helped pass the very first generic drug law. Before my father got to the Senate, apparently we didn't have generic drugs. I spent the last year of his life with him. We worked on, sadly, he knew he was going to die, and he was diagnosed with cancer and chose not to have any treatment. But we got to spend the last year of his life just really telling stories, and he loved sharing the story of how he got to Santa Fe. And this is how he put it, a hippie doctor came up to me, you know, because he's from Las Vegas, New Mexico, right?
Yeah.
Northern New Mexico, a traditional, you know, northern New Mexico. And he comes to Santa Fe to serve as a senator, and a hippie doctor comes up and explains, you know, how we don't have generic drugs. So that was one of the first bills that he sponsored. You know, and he talks about even back then the pharmaceutical industry, you know, fought him on it. He didn't pass it the first year, which he acknowledged was okay because, you know, it was his first year and they spent some time over the interim working on it, and it was a much better bill when they passed it his second year. So we do come from that. My grandfather was actually an elected official. My brother was county commissioner, the chair of the county commission in San Miguel County as well. I'd like to point out one other brother. My brother Marfin is now the a chair of the Democratic Party, but I also like to point out that my brother Steve Ledger is perhaps one of the most wonderful political servants because he's a musician. And we all need music in our lives.
That sounds great. Well, tell me about what you're doing now. You're a lawyer, and tell us a little bit about your life.
I am a lawyer. I always say I started my career at Head Start in Las Vegas, fell in love with learning, and was lucky enough to go away to Yale and then to Stanford Law School. I found my voice at Stanford. I was trained in what was called the rebellious lawyering tradition. And the most important thing a rebellious lawyer does is listen. And so I came back home to New Mexico and had a marvelous career that is incredibly rewarding and always interesting, listening to various aspects of the many communities we have here in New Mexico. I've spent a lot of time representing tribes and pueblos, Native American businesses. I have kind of different areas of expertise in that. One is economic development. I've done a lot helping to get businesses started and going I've done a lot to create infrastructure, so I'm trying to get broadband to areas that don't have it, to clean water, sewage. It's amazing how many parts of New Mexico do not have good infrastructure. And the lack of that infrastructure right now, with the lack of broadband, is it's a travesty, because children cannot learn online if they do not have internet in their homes. And I was speaking with a governor yesterday about an issue, and he said, would you please remind people that our children cannot do online courses because not a single household has access to the internet.
Oh, wonderful.
Not a single household. And that's the case in San Felipe and Santo Domingo and Cochiti, none of the traditional villages. I have been trying to get them broadband. I've been part of a coalition trying to bring broadband. I've been the legal side of that, trying to bring broadband, part of a coalition. And they will get it, hopefully, but it should have gotten there already. Part of why I say I'm running for Congress is that I understand the beauty of this state, but I also understand its poverty. And I think that that's a really important qualification for our next state representative, because it's going to be our job to go to D.C. and push for legislation that can be used in the community. There is a lot of federal money that does not get deployed because it's written in a way where the law just doesn't really understand what poor communities look like, what rural communities look like, and what you would need to do to get that money into those communities. But I've done a lot of that. That's been one of my other specialties. That's part of the economic development. My other area of specialization is voting rights. So things that we're talking about right now during this crisis, how are we going to conduct this next election? I'm a Voting Rights Act expert. I do the redistricting every 10 years to make sure we don't gerrymander minority districts. I won the ranked choice voting case. So I'm an attorney, and the kind of work I do is so varied that we could take hours talking about it. I have an environmental law practice aspect to it as well. But I've had such a great variety of work I've done over the last 30 years that I think it puts me in a wonderful position to be able to advocate for our communities in D.C.
Thank you for doing that kind of quick summary. But let me just clarify one thing. The Ranked Voting Rights Act was in Santa Fe. Wasn't that true?
Yes. Santa Fe people had passed ranked choice voting, but for some reason the city council had failed to utilize it for 10 years. So a group of organizers who believe in democracy came to me and said, is there anything we can do about this? I said, absolutely. They should have done this. So we were forced to sue the city. We tried to, this was, you know, a different administration. But so the city councilor were, I think, afraid of it for some reason. But we took it to the Supreme Court. We won at the district court level. We won at the Supreme Court level. And Santa Fe now does its elections through ranked choice voting. So Santa Fe adopted it. But because of Santa Fe's experience, the same group of people that I was working with, clients, and the Secretary of State, who was my expert in my lawsuit, it's now available statewide. Las Cruces has adopted it. I believe it's been adopted by at least three, and more are looking at it because, like for Albuquerque has a runoff. Well, this is basically an instant runoff, and you don't have that huge expense.
Yeah.
The other thing about it is people are nicer to each other. They talk about the policy issues because that's how they're going to convince people, because they want to be somebody's second choice.
Oh, okay. That sounds great.
Yeah.
It sounds to me that you have a really strong interest in New Mexico, and I'm wondering what made you decide to go for a federal position?
Well, I've also had worked at the federal level basically throughout my career, has been negotiating and pushing or suing the federal government to do what they're supposed to do. But I've also served as, under President Clinton, I was White House Fellow. Also, I was the Special Assistant to the Secretary at HUD, Housing and Urban Development. I helped put together one of the first White House conferences on housing. From that experience, you understand the power of the federal government. Everything we do is touched by the federal government in one way or the other. There are certain things that are very local, But even then, because of federal funds, it affects it. Because of this environmental and cultural work I talk about, I was appointed by President Obama. I was President Obama's vice chair on the Advisory Council for Historic Preservation, which once again are big issues for New Mexico, right? What I took on as that vice chair was making sure that we started saying we need to incorporate and preserve and speak about the history of everybody in the United States, from Asian Americans to Latinos, Native Americans. All of those histories have to be part of our story, because that's how we don't marginalize communities. We don't marginalize, and we take on our history, which can be ugly at times, but if you don't see it, if you don't acknowledge it, it doesn't work. So because of these experiences and my 30 years of working with the federal government, I know how important the laws that Congress passed are and how they're affected. And I think that what I say is I'm running because so much that we love is under attack, right, at the federal level and also at local, not in New Mexico, we're kind of lucky, but at this federal level. And so I want to protect what we love. And the way I see I can do this is be one of those voices in Congress passing the laws that impact us. For example, the emergency laws that we just passed and they're dealing with the economic recovery around COVID-19.
I'm speaking to Teresa Leger Fernandez.
And so you feel as though in Congress you could just continue doing some of the work that you've been working on for years.
Exactly, except for in a different sense. You know, I've helped build 3 rural health clinics. And so I know that healthcare issues are going to be huge, especially coming out of this crisis. And so I want to make sure that we will push to do an overhaul of our healthcare system, because the structural problems with it are just so evident right now, right? But I want to make sure that from my understanding of what rural healthcare looks like, I want to bring that knowledge. And I'm not an expert on it. I have knowledge about it, but I want to bring that to D.C. But because of my work, I know experts, and I know that I want to go and get their input and say, as we're looking at that, tell me what it looks like in Española when you were trying to deal with a health crisis and also deal with addiction. Tell me what we need to do as we fix this system. What a good lawyer does is gather experts to help inform what the next course of action is. And because of my work, I know who the experts are out there. And when I talk about experts, it's not just the scientists, it's the people on the ground doing the work, facing the obstacles. To me, those are some of the most important experts we have. It's the people doing the work on the ground, in the trenches, encountering the obstacles. I want them to help inform the legislation.
One of the things that I've been thinking about is there's a lot of new women who just went into Congress, and now there are going to be more women running for Congress. How do you see yourself working with the current Congress, which has sort of an old guard and a new guard, I think?
You know, I've always worked, part of my work has been bringing people together who are of different perspectives, perhaps. You know, bringing ranchers and environmentalists and tribes together to fix the problem, right? You might not think those three would normally get together, especially not 20 years ago. But one of my skills is that the ability to talk about what is the, to bring people together to talk about what the problem is and how we're going to get to a solution. And so the old guard, new guard, I think that people are elected to serve. And if you talk about what is it that we're trying to accomplish, and respect that, recognize that that's why they're there, we can get somewhere. I'm very excited. I've been endorsed by the Congressional Hispanic Caucus. Many of some old guard and new guard have already started giving me advice, giving me support, mentoring me. And so I love that. You know, I've received support from Representative Sanchez, who has been part of Congress for a long time, as well as Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Her Courage to Change organization endorsed me and have given me advice and helped me out. Those are two sort of, you know, two different ends. So I know I'm going to be able to talk about the issues with everybody. I think it's very exciting that there are so many women and women of color who are coming from communities or experiences whose voices haven't been heard getting elected.
Well, let's talk a little bit about some of the issues that we talk about on Women's Focus. One of those is choice, reproductive choice, and I think that you are endorsed by Emily's List.
I am endorsed by Emily's List. I'm very, very proud to be carrying their banner in this election. Emily's List is as responsible as anyone, any entity for making sure that pro-choice Democratic women get elected. And that I was one of their first endorsements of the cycle, which was really wonderful. They endorsed me back in May, June. So last year, right? Because they really recognize that they want to make sure that the women they are supporting understand the community well. And they love Ellen Malcolm, who's the founder of Emily's List. She's the chair of the board. She's no longer as active in the organization, but she's still the chair of the board. She has come out to help me raise money. The reality is campaigns are expensive. But she says, every time I hear that when we elect Teresa, New Mexico will have an all-woman of color delegation, I get the chills.
and we've heard from Ellen Malcolm on Women's Focus. We've talked to her on Women's Focus.
Oh, Ellen Malcolm is marvelous. And she's really great. She called our supporters, you know, as we were transitioning to a virtual campaign. And so she got on the phone with, you know, about 30 of us and said, now remember, now more than ever, it is important to elect candidates like Teresa, because leadership is so much more important now than ever. And we see what good leadership looks like, because we see that in our state with Michelle Lujan Grisham, who's an Emily's List candidate. And then we see it in what Trump is doing, which is not good leadership. It's the opposite. So now more than ever, as we come out of the COVID-19 crisis, we need that strong leadership. That's part of what I've been saying. And she got on the phone and she just said, come on, guys, we're going to do this. We're going to do it and elect Teresa, because now more than ever, we need women's voices as we come out of this crisis. Because women are, I think we do bring a perspective that is very focused on community, family, the needs of the community, and understanding what mothers are going through, what grandmothers are going through, and fighting against the fact that they are using this crisis to further undermine women's ability to have access to reproductive health, including whether or not they need to have an abortion, is criminal. And so we need these women's voices stronger than ever.
Let me just ask you also, an issue that we talk about a lot is paid family leave.
Yes, I think that we have had a little bit of paid family leave now because of this crisis, and we should not go back. We need to always go forward, never backwards. We need to make paid family leave a permanent aspect of our governance structure. It needs to be the law. It is a travesty that the United States is one of the few nations. I think there's you can count them not even using your full hand, that do not have paid family leave. We must make sure that paid family leave is available. We cannot have a situation like we did here where people they have somebody ill at home, but they feel they must go to work. And then that leads to the further transmission of a virus. Paid family leave is something that recognizes that you are taking care of an entire community when you take care of those who are ill in your community, because they need somebody to care for them at home. And the only way you have a strong community is if that person who needs to be at home with their family member who's ill has the ability to do that without losing their job and without losing their income. Because people should not have to choose between an ill family member and their income. And we're forcing people to make too many of those choices. So I am very much supportive of paid family leave. I know we are trying in New Mexico to get closer to that. I loved listening to your program on that. This winter you had the Women's Law Center talk about it, I believe.
Yes. Uh-huh.
So I am very much in favor of that. We're doing the same thing on just healthcare choices too. We are making people choose between paying for healthcare and bankrupting deductibles, paying for healthcare or paying for rent. I mean, the choices that we are forcing people to do are wrong, because it shouldn't be a choice. That should be part of our safety net. That should be part of what our social contract is and what our society provides.
Do you want to talk a little bit about health?
Yeah, so I am in favor of a lot of restructuring of the manner in which healthcare is provided. And the principles that I talk about that I think still apply now are that we need to make sure that there are no bankrupting copays and deductibles, because it doesn't matter if you have health insurance if you cannot afford the copays or deductibles. That means you don't have access to healthcare. So people need to be able to have access to healthcare that is affordable. It must be universal access, so that if you live in the United States, that you have access to healthcare. Because once again, if we leave anybody out, then if they don't have access to healthcare, this COVID crisis has shown it. They get sick, they infect the rest of the community. We must strive to keep the entire community healthy at all times. It should be part of our goal as a society. You know, we need to make sure that people do not get discriminated against because of pre-existing conditions. I'm a cancer survivor, and I was lucky because I caught it early, and I had health insurance, and I'm alive because of it. There were 4 people in my family who were diagnosed with cancer in a 4-year period, and I'm the only one living. And part of the reason I'm here and my sister isn't is I caught my cancer early, and she didn't catch hers early. Making sure that our health care system is responsive immediately when an illness shows up is important, because when people postpone going to the doctor or getting something done because they can't afford it, that is going to cost the system, the healthcare system, a lot more money to treat later on, and it can cost people's lives, and we should not do that. I think healthcare needs to be accessible, which means we need to have it accessible in rural areas. We need our federally qualified health clinics, health centers, to be fully funded and accessible in the rural areas. We need people who are serving the rural areas, our doctors and nurses, to be paid more because they're serving in the rural areas, not less. Some of those are the key principles, and imagine applying those key principles to this crisis. And even now, are there people holding back because they can't afford to get the treatment? The last I saw it, that's not covered. We need to make sure those things are covered. It's healthcare for one person is healthcare for the community. And if we start seeing things through a community lens, that will inform what our policy should be. And we'll have a more sane, rational policy if we start thinking about these needs as community needs. If you can't afford your copays and your deductibles, it doesn't matter if you have health insurance, because you're not going to be able to afford going to get that medical care. So we need to make sure that that is addressed. That is one of the fallacies of saying we now have a lot more people covered by health insurance, when if those health insurance plans, especially the way Trump has undermined it even further, means that you really don't have access to health care. And I want everybody to be able to have access. Health care must be affordable, accessible, and quality.
Did you want to add anything?
Even though we're in this crisis right now, the climate crisis is also something we're going to have to address in 2021 when we have a new president, because the same way that this crisis has had such a impact on our daily lives and our economy and how we interact with people, the climate crisis, if it isn't addressed, is going to have that same kind of devastating impact. And so I think that it is something that as women we need to be very concerned about. I like to say that I have been endorsed by Emily's List and NARAL, by the way, and because they understand that I'm going to be a champion for women's rights. But I've been also endorsed by the Sierra Club because they understand that I'm going to be a champion for the protection of the most important mother we have, which is Mother Earth. And I think that we need to not forget that there are other crises that as we come out of this one that we need to address at the same time. We're going to have a lot of work to do in Washington in 2021.
I'm assuming that your campaign is going the way the others are, which is by phone.
Yeah. My campaign nimbly moved to be a virtual campaign. We're pretty excited because we won 42% of the vote in a 7-way race at the convention. We were really excited. We were ready to go. I had hundreds of volunteers ready to knock doors for me because we've really mobilized, we've energized people in this campaign. And I think that that's really important, that you want people to be energized and excited and motivated, because that's not good just for my campaign. That's good for our democracy in general and for all the other people who are going to be running. So we are doing everything virtual. We're very good at Zoom now. We had our very first Zoom policy. We're having Tea with Teresa, conversation, community, and connection. Our very first policy discussion was around health issues. We had some health experts, the former president of the American Medical Association, the person who's running the Kiowa Pueblo Health Clinic, and a woman, Dr. Leslie Hayes, who works with families in addiction in Española. Our next event is going to be around immigrants, and it's going to be titled All in It Together, Strengthening Communities with Immigrant Families. So we'll be putting that up on our website. I'd like people to join us. Go to our Facebook, and you'll see the different policy conversations we're having. Those are great because we get to actually delve into issues. I serve more almost like you. I serve more as a moderator. I raise some of the policy issues so they can share with me. These are experts on the ground. I want to hear from them. And our audience loved it. We had about 70 people tune into that, and we've had a lot more people stream it from where we're posting it. So I invite people to go to our Facebook page. My website is teresaforall.com. And my Facebook page is my wonderfully long name, Teresa Leger Fernandez, and they can see the many events that we are doing. We still want to talk about the issues with our community, with our voters, and we'll continue to do that. I love seeing everybody's faces on the little, everybody's faces get smaller and smaller the more that join us. But, you know, it's like, I've got to see your beautiful faces. And so we do keep the faces on while we have these events.
Well, thank you for sharing that with us.
Okay, thank you so much, Susan, for what you do to allow New Mexico to hear the voices of women and address the many issues that we face and care about. Thank you so much.
Muchísimas
gracias.